government regains the trust of its citizens is by telling the truth. There is no other way, no shortcut.
I call upon our government to open up like the Belgians have, the French have, the Brazilians have, the Argentines, the Mexicans have all released their files. It's about time now that we do the same thing and become a part of this planetary community.
It is way past time for all of us to know what our own government knows, instead of being kept in the dark by a policy of denial.
The last time that Congress held a hearing addressing the extraterrestrial issue was 1968, 44 years of sightings ago. In those 4.5 decades, hundreds of thousands of new sightings have taken place. Government agency witnesses have come forward. Media coverage has expanded. Hundreds of documentaries have been produced. Thousands of books have been written. And yet the United States Congress has remained silent. So for a period of 5 days, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., 2 blocks from the White House, 12 blocks from the Congress of the United States, we're going to conduct a citizen hearing on disclosure of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. 40 to 50 witnesses of high rank and station, from military, from agencies, possibly from intelligence services, along with the top researchers in the world, will give 30 hours of testimony to 5 former members of the United States Congress.
So maybe the citizens...
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable, Countdown to Disclosure. Hi, I'm back. I've missed being here, everybody. I've been on an adventure in L.A. I went to see the L.A. premiere of the Sirius documentary. And that was on Monday night, the 22nd. So I want to tell you all about that. In the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, I'll be leaving for Washington, D.C., to join the citizens' hearing, and I'll be there all week. When I am at the citizens' hearing next week, then we will be live broadcasting the hearing during this hour on bbsradio.com/galactic roundtable. What I found out in LA is that there are a lot of new developments coming up, and not all of them can be spoken about at this time. So I want to fill you in on everything. I'm not really sure where to begin. I got home from LA at 1 a.m. I've had a few hours sleep. My voice isn't good. There's so much happening that my head is spinning, and I'm working at keeping on top of it. While I was in L.A., I was dragged into a new project that is very high level that has to do with disclosure directly. And it's a dovetailing of all these things coming together. And I have a lot of work on my plate right now. The first thing I want to say, which I feel is the most important of all, is that the most important thing anyone can say about disclosure, and the ones I talk to agree about this, is that it's important that we Earth citizens come into our knowing about our spiritual lives, and that we spend time each day working on our inner lives. And we make those more rich, because without knowing that we're spiritual beings, disclosure doesn't help a whole lot. So there's a lot of things to this. To begin with, we have the Sirius documentary. I don't know if you've seen it. There were about 12,000 people live streaming it that night. And since then, others can live stream it now. I thought it was very, very good. I noticed that the way it was written, it was kept in an elementary level. So those who have been following Disclosure for 60 or 70 years, and there's many of them, they were left feeling that they knew so much more and it wasn't brought out in the film. And I can see that that would be a normal reaction, but we have to understand that this news has to get out to everybody on the basic level who have never heard of it before or have heard of it but have no idea what it's about. And so I felt that the way that the film was written and presented was very, very good. And I felt that they covered many of the bigger issues very well. For me, one of the most important things that they covered was making contact the fifth way, which they call CE5. And I hope everyone will do this. I created a website just to explain what CE5 is and how to participate in it. And I have a videotape on there of Dr. Stephen Greer explaining about CE5, making contact through human initiated contact, speaking out to the lighted beings in the sky, asking them to contact you through coherent thought, through resonance. And if you want more information about that, go to galacticroundtable.co, galacticroundtable.co. My regular website is galacticroundtable.org, galacticroundtable.org, and the CE5 website showing you how to do it is galacticroundtable.co. So please check those out. I want to read this to you about our spiritual life. It's short. Spiritual life is not just a conglomerate of fantasy, mythology, and allegoric romanticism, though these are the tools of Savitri. Savitri means pursuing the light. Cosmic law is inalienable and impervious to the human desire and manipulation. Appropriate application of the law constitutes the highest science, metaphysics, science of the heart. That is absolute justice, far removed from any human interpretations of the term. From this view, consider the properties of the castle of Brahman, wherein lies much revered heart of heart. To overcome body consciousness does not imply that the physical shell should be discarded prematurely. The body is a vehicle for the transmutations of the total being. Each one of us in the physical body has a Merkaba body that can float out to space. This is what Disclosure's about. Disclosure's about knowing who you are, knowing that you're a spiritual being, and knowing that you can travel all on your own. And after the citizens' hearing is over, that's what we'll be exploring on this radio program. We'll be going more into depth about that. So let me tell you a little bit about the movie. While I was at the movie, I saw Dr. Greer and Stephen Bassett were there. I saw David Wilcock and there were several others that I knew there. It was very exciting. Everyone who was in the room has spent a portion of their life and their finances making sure that this information comes to light. So it was very sweet being there. There were about 2,000 people in the theater. We were at the Regal Theater in LA, And it was a huge theater complex with old fashioned, with balconies. So we just walked in and took our seats and sat there for a while. Dr. Greer thanked everybody, especially his wife. And we heard from the director of the movie who he wrote the script, Adeep. And at the end of the movie, they had had a contest to see who, to see which question they would ask Adeep at the end. And the question that won the most votes was, are you a believer? And didn't have an opinion. He was detached from what the truth was. And he said, now that the film, he said in reply to the answer, to reply to answer the question, he would have to say, does it matter if he believes? And that's a very interesting answer, because there is no wrong answer. And then he summarized at the end by saying that it's important that we continue to pursue the truth. And that's what's ultimately important. Hi, everybody. We're back. We had some technical difficulties. Who knows what's happening? It was something that sounded like it had never happened before. So, boy, where were we in our conversation? I was talking about Dr. Greer's premiere, LA premiere, and I was saying who was there. And I was talking about the director and how he had said that we should continue to look for the truth. So the film was very good. I hope everybody will see it. For $9.95, you can stream it on your computer. And I sent an email about that. If you'd like to be added to my email list, it's eltrutwin@gmail.com. What is next? Let's talk about the live webcast. Next week at the Citizens Hearing. All 5 days, the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure are being live streamed to the internet in English and Spanish and archived in 6 languages, English, Spanish, Hindi, Arabic, Japanese, and Mandarin Chinese, representing approximately 1/2 of the world's populations. Archives for each language will be posted after the hearing sometime in May, available for 30 days. Subscribers can access the entire Citizens Hearing on Disclosure live broadcast for $3.80. Subscriptions to the English live broadcast will include evening lectures given by hearing witnesses. Subscribers can access the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure archives for $3.80. The English archives will include the evening lectures. The purchase portals and stream players can be found on these pages. This is at citizenshearing.org. And if you haven't purchased your live stream yet, I urge you to do so. It's important that the media has the numbers of how many thousands or hundreds of thousands have purchased the webcast and know that we are all watching the witnesses give their testimony. Live webcast is in English and Spanish, and archived webcasts will be in English, Spanish, Japanese, Arabic, Hindu, and Chinese. We had received some intel from Rama Arjuna, and he had been talking to Ranamu, and he said that the everything that happened in Boston, I don't even like to mention it because it's so dumb. It's so overplayed. Such a nice opportunity for them to keep on the front lines fear for all of us. They were saying that that was a distraction all these days of headlines about that was a distraction to something much larger that happened. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. In West Texas, there was a bombing of a fertilizer plant. And this happened, I think, on the 19th of April. And the intelligence that Rama Arjuna had received was that this was an explosive device that was wrapped in ceramics and aimed at Texas and dropped to land in West Texas, very near to Waco. And the Waco massacre, which involved Janet Reno and Hillary Clinton, was very much tied to the history of Nisara. But what is unusual about this in West Texas was that the explosive device was dropped from the International Space Station. So, remember, we don't have one International Space Station. We have many International Space Stations. And since 1947, reverse engineers working through private corporations have been reverse engineering the technology that we've received from ships that have either crashed, been forced to crash, or have been shot down by our militaries, both in Russia, the United States, and other areas. And with this technology, they cut in new propulsion rockets that do not use petroleum-based products onto the International Space Station. They created more than 100 other International Space Stations. And with the new propulsion technology, their weight changes from multi-ton to a few pounds, and they're able to, with this propulsion technology only weighing a few pounds, travel into deep space. And they are bringing back payloads that would blow your mind. And they are landing on, exploring, visiting other civilizations. They're cutting deals for cash payloads. And one of the things that they're selling, they're also bringing payloads to other places. And one of the things that they need in other places, mined from Earth, is boron. Boron is an element that is mined. And they load it up on the ISSs and they take it out there and they receive cash payments for natural resources from Earth. And this is high treason. And this is punishable at the intergalactic, the solar tribunal on Saturn. And we will never have our freedom as spiritual sentient beings until we have disclosure. We have to have the truth from our governments about their interactions with extraterrestrials. And now, just this past week, April 19th, the Dark Ones, who are running the secret space program, sent a missile to Earth from the International Space Station. This has been confirmed. We know this for sure. And the ones who bring that information will say, and there's a much larger story involved. You know, there's much more involved than just that. So why they did it, you know, the timing that they did it, and what else is going on, is a much, much larger story. There's so many things that you have no idea about. And I had meetings in LA that I had not scheduled. I was literally pulled off the street and taken into meetings. And I was invited to continue with this kind of work I do of bringing the truth. And I was entrusted with new information that's not out there at all. And so I'll be really watching my back now. But please stay tuned because I have more to bring you and it will be very soon. In the meantime, you can do something for me. I would like it if you would invite everybody to be live at the citizens' hearing or live stream. So if you come down to Washington, D.C., send me an email, eltrutwin@gmail.com, and let me know you're there. There may be time for us to meet. So since I'll be traveling tomorrow, I'm going to, I'll be offline again. We'll do a rebroadcast. And then next week, when you come back to Galactic Roundtable here at BBS, then you will be hearing the live stream of the hearings. In the meantime, as my schedule has been not at home in April, if in any way there's a way you can send a donation to me on galacticroundtable.org, there's a contribute button. I really could use more help now. April has been tough, and I have a lot of hard work ahead of me when I get home. And so all contributions are very much needed and very much appreciated. For now, what I'd like to do is I want to share a presentation with you from Stephen Bassett at Paradigm Research Group regarding the citizens' hearings on disclosure. Enjoy this, everybody.
There's a group of people on this planet who have hidden the truth from you for a very long time. They have a vision for your future that they know doesn't work unless they keep you in the dark about some things. Like the true nature of our spirituality, the truth about how our reality works, how each of us has the ability to choose and change it, individually, but especially when united. The truth about civilizations that rose and fell before our own. The truth that we are not alone on this planet, and have never been. I'm Tim Robin. Over years of searching, studying, synchronicities, and experience, I've discovered that the big picture of our reality is very different from the one that's been spoon-fed and programmed into us through school, religion, and mainstream media. We've been lulled into a hypnotic sleep, a nightmare, really, conned into co-creating a world that doesn't come close to reflecting our true nature. I'm here to help others wake up so we can work together as sisters and brothers to create a new vision for our future and a world that works for all of us. This is from the new world. My guest, Stephen Bassett, is an exopolitical activist and a leading advocate for ending the 65-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding the extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. If you've heard of World Disclosure Day, then you know his work. That was his idea. He's the founder and executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, which will produce the Citizen Hearings on Disclosure in Washington, D.C., 5 full days of congressional-style hearings, featuring a committee of 5 former members of Congress and more than 40 witnesses starting April 29th. Stephen's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media, including in 2011 when the Paradigm Research Group started a petition on the White House's own petition site that reached the threshold requiring the Obama administration to respond. Listeners may note that the White House soon after significantly raised the number of petitioners necessary to get a response. That, in tandem with what seemed to me to be the same old tired response officialdom has been handing us for decades, leads this seeker of truth to assume the disclosure petition made some very influential people very uncomfortable. That in itself makes Stephen Bassett a hero in my book. And now, Bassett talks to us about his latest gracious attempt to force truth from power. The Citizen Hearings on Disclosure. Stephen Bassett, thanks for giving us some of your time today to talk about the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure.
Certainly.
Now, this whole disclosure business, this isn't a new activity for you. You've been a busy beaver in disclosure since setting up the Paradigm Research Group back in 1996. And I love the tagline on your PRG website. It's no longer about the lights in the sky. It's about lies on the ground. You've been at this for a little bit.
16 years. The truth embargo has been in place since the late 40s, so it's about 65 years now since that policy was initiated. And it's time to end it. And I got into the field about 5 years after the Cold War was over, which was really the first opportunity that the American people had to learn the truth, that they're not alone in the universe, which I think is a pretty important piece of information. Some might disagree, because during the Cold War, it was just not possible. The situation was too dangerous, too volatile. Obviously, if a mistake had been made, we would have annihilated civilization. I mean, everybody understood that. 2,000 or 3,000 nuclear warheads being set off would be the end of our fine little experiment. So the decision was made on the part of the U.S. government, and by and large, all the rest of the major governments of the world, for various reasons, some differing from the U.S. position, but that this would remain on hold. Now, the Cold War ended in 91, and it was time to look to get this out. By 96, clearly it was starting to be a problem. That's when I entered the field. And now, 17 years later, amazingly enough, still, we have not gotten that information, and we have not seen the end of the truth embargo, but it's close. So I'm kind of lucky to have maybe entered a major issue at the very end, kind of like jumping into a marathon race in the last 3 miles and running across the finish line feeling, wow, I ran a marathon. I have colleagues that have been working on this issue for 40 years or longer, and a number of colleagues that didn't see the resolution of this issue. They didn't live long enough. So I'm kind of fortunate that perhaps we will see the truth embargo end very possibly this year, frankly.
That would be fantastic. It does definitely seem to be, especially even just this month, it's on the tip. Now, what started you down this road to begin with? How did you become interested in UFO phenomena and getting disclosure out?
Well, of course, I don't call it UFO phenomena anymore. It's extraterrestrial phenomena.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, it's the UFO is the language of the truth embargo. It's the language of the early days. It was an acronym created by the government purposefully to help keep the whole thing in check. Obviously, if you're always studying something unidentified, you haven't identified anything. It creates a tautology of uncertainty. It's not really a sophisticated or exotic backstory. I was interested in science as a kid. I loved science fiction. When the ET issue began to emerge in my consciousness, it seemed pretty logical to me that that's what it was. I didn't have any resistance to it. By the time I was 20, pretty convinced, clearly that's what's going on. But so what? I had other things to do. I wasn't going to engage the issue. Didn't. But by 1995, when I decided I really wanted to get involved in something that really interested me and maybe could be useful to others, and as opposed to just doing what you have to do to pay the rent, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. This issue was there. It was there pretty quickly in my mind, and I looked into it, sort of got up to speed a little bit and realized that it had developed quite substantially since I was a younger man, and that maybe we were headed towards resolution. And now, again, this is 95, 4 years after the end of the Cold War. I was noticing things here and there, read a couple of books, particularly John Mack's book, Abduction, and I decided, this issue is huge. There's a lot of importance here. Why don't I go engage it? So that's what I did. Quickly realized that I didn't want to do research. What I wanted to do was the activism, the politics of it, to see if we could change policy. That was my mindset. I'm kind of an activist. That's my natural default position. And it turned out that that's exactly what was needed, that all the science in the world was not going to resolve the issue into a standard and appropriate status. The government was deliberately suppressing and denying the truth on this. So all of the efforts of the science of this subject and all those groups and all those meetings and all those reports and everything else wasn't bringing it to a head. The government's policy had to change, and that's what I decided to go after and launch Paradigm Research Group late 1996, set up the website a year and a half later.
At the very beginning of the internet really coming to mainstream public.
Early days, yeah, I didn't know too much. The site's still dated, needs to be completely upgraded, which it will be soon. So the deeper I got into it, the more profound it became. In other words, the idea of extraterrestrials here is, to me, not a big deal. It's not even, it's a big deal, but in a way it's quite quite straightforward.
It's like, an idea that you've gotten used to.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like saying, well, there's a French tourist outside in line at a restaurant, or the Japanese like to visit Hawaii. There are ETs here. They just don't happen to be human, or certainly mostly not human. So that's not that compelling as something that you want to engage for 5, 10, 15, 25 years. However, when I got into this issue, I began to get an understanding of why things aren't going well in the United States. I got a different perspective on what I call the systemic failure of U.S. systems, which is causing our country to go into significant decline on many fronts. And also, small, medium, and large scales. So the implications of ET issue began to spread to other areas. And so the activism or the advocacy of the truth with respect to the extraterrestrial presence becomes an advocacy towards many things. Political reform, secrecy reform, technology breakthroughs, potential economic, massive economic change and enhancement. All of these things can emerge very quickly from resolving this issue. Not surprising. When you deny a truth of this magnitude, when you suppress it, like the Catholic Church tried to do with the Copernican Revolution, and other governments of totalitarian states have tried to do with various areas of science, meaning, you know, politically that's not acceptable, so you can't. Whatever you found there is not true, and don't look again or we'll do something terrible to you. Whenever that happens, it always has caused serious problems, serious damage. And a truth of this magnitude, not surprisingly, the damage is starting to accumulate. So there's a lot at stake here now. And as that emerged over time, It was very easy to remain committed to the truth advocacy process we call the disclosure movement.
Well, and I want to get into the citizens' hearings on disclosure in a second, but before we get all the way there, I want to kind of, for people who may not be familiar with everything that you've been active with, because, you know, the Paradigm Research Group, you didn't just start an advocacy group and, you know, call it good. That somehow led up to the citizens' hearings on disclosure. You've been busy in the meantime. Back in 1997, you started your first petition to get Congress to hold hearings on this.
Oh, yeah, there was the Roswell petition and other petitions. I registered as a lobbyist with the House and Senate, which attracted a lot of attention. No one had ever done that. Started a political action committee called XPAC, which is basically in suspension now, but could be activated at any time.
But the first exopolitics political action committee in history.
And, yeah, the first one. And then the first exopolitics conference.
In 2004. You assisted the Disclosure Project in 2001.
A little bit, yeah. I was a little bit helpful, but it wasn't my project. I was just, you know, like helping a neighbor. And other projects, of course, the development of websites. Probably one of the things I'm most proud of is the creation of the Exopolitics World Network, exopoliticsworld.net. We've got about 23 countries with portal sites now. I think it grow very quickly, and I expect it to grow quickly. So it's about networking. It's about getting stuff to the media, informing the public. All of that we've kind of been doing, but not nearly at the pace that we'd want it to because there was no money. All of this was being done with basically no money at all. But thanks to the Internet, the greatest invention of all time, it's possible to create political movements. It's possible to do a lot.
As long as we can keep it free.
You give it, you know, well, but you can operate pretty cheaply. I mean, that's the point. So my advocacy has been centered on the Internet. I've got about 7 or 8 websites, 5 or 6 Facebook pages and all that. But we're starting to now take it to the next level. The X conference was pretty high level. This event we're doing now is going to cost $600,000. These are the kinds of numbers you expect when you're dealing in the major leagues, when you're operating at a higher level. So all that means is that the truth embargo is that much more vulnerable. I expect more money to come forward. I mean, very late in coming and long overdue, but the government is not harassing witnesses. It's not doing anything what I would consider bad in this issue. That doesn't mean it's not doing unpleasant things in other areas, even more sensitive than this one, but they're kind of standing down. People are becoming less concerned about what it means to be associated with the issue. And so I expect a lot more funding to start turning up, which is going to make it possible to drive the advocacy even harder. And so that kind of snowballs to an ultimate conclusion, that ultimate outcome that the government will eventually have to, you know, do with the Catholic Church. It said, look, we're sorry. The earth does go around the sun. We sort of got that wrong, and we apologize. Let's move on.
And how do you think that will look when that finally happens? How do you think that will unveil itself? Are we talking presidential? Or are we just talking?
You know, for it to be disclosure, it has to be the official acknowledgement by the government. And that's, you know, magnitude of this issue would require the head of state. So A nation will go first. I don't think it'll be a group of nations. I think it'll be a single nation will go first, grab the brass ring, and then the rest of the world will have to follow pretty fast.
And what about the folks who are keeping them from doing it thus far?
Well, it's not. We don't assume that somebody's, quote, keeping the nation from doing anything. It's more complex than that. But the point I was making is the U.S. has a very big decision to make, and we're going to keep telling the government this in various ways until they hear us. And that is, if you do not take proactive measures and disclose the ET presence to the American people, another nation is going to do it first, and then you're going to have to follow hat in hand and say, oh, I guess we should tell you too, which means the government, the U.S. government, will get lots of blame and lots of criticism for managing, directing, and conducting this truth embargo without getting the benefits, the glory, the esteem, the legacy of ending it.
Right.
So it's all downside. And meanwhile, the government's still under this impression they can keep leaking stuff out and stretch this out over another, what, 20 years, 30 years? I have no idea what's in their mind. But forget about it. As they say in New Jersey, it ain't going to happen. Other nations are making it quite clear they're pretty much fed up with this, and they're going to take action pretty soon. And it could be not necessarily one of our close allies. It could be Russia. It could be the People's Republic of China, more than capable of ending the truth embargo anytime they wanted to. And we've seen indications that they could very well do that. So the U.S. government is not in the get-it-done business. I know that. It's locked up. It's tied down. It's turned in on itself. It's gridlocked. It's gotten partisan. It doesn't work. I understand. It's like somebody with some debilitating disease. You can't get out of bed. It's like that. And you feel sorry for it, but obviously there's going to be consequences. And on this issue, on almost every issue, the government's attitude is, well, we can't deal with it. Maybe somebody else will someday. They better get out of that attitude very fast.
So you say a country like China could end the truth embargo at any time if they so choose. Why do you think they haven't?
Well, the Western allies didn't, because the U.S. was the world leader, and the U.S. wanted that embargo, and given the fact that we were fairly instrumental in defeating the Axis powers, and that there was no nation on earth that could remotely contain the Soviet Union other than the United States, pretty much whatever we want, we got back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. That's totally understandable. I'm not going to argue with that. What about the Soviet Union and People's Republic of China? Well, guess what? They didn't give a damn what we wanted, but both of them were, what, developing totalitarian ideological control states with prison camps, gulags, draconian measures, secret police, spying, all that stuff, to try to keep people in line because they were forcing them to adhere to an ideology unquestioning. This is not the situation you want to tell everybody, oh, by the way, there's extraterrestrials here, and your country is just one little speck on a planet in a much bigger solar system in a vast galaxy in a vast universe. So the idea that they would do this and jeopardize their ideological control was remote. So they had no desire to introduce this into the world. Now that's changing. I mean, obviously, the Russia today is not the Soviet Union of 1955. And absolutely, the People's Republic of China today is not the PRC of 1960. And we had better think very long and hard about whether we're going to sit on our hands as a nation and let one of these countries pick up one of the great historical legacies ever to be achieved by a nation.
Yeah, I mean, when this happens, it will be a pivot point for all of human history.
Yeah, and the nation that leads that stands on that pivot point, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen to them in the 21st century? Their credibility and the esteem in which they're held is going to increase exponentially in this century. So there is a lot at stake here, and the U.S. government is simply locked up, unable to move forward.
So to grease the wheels, you have created the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure, which is going to happen April 29th through May 3rd in Washington, D.C., just down the road from ye olde White House. 5 full days of hearings and testimony, free public seating for up to 500 people a day.
250 a day. Well, there's two sessions. There's seating for about 250, and we're going to – it's first come, first seated, then we're going to empty the room for the second session. So theoretically, 500 people could come through that day, but there'll be some double-ups, obviously.
Oh, yes. You've got some real big names coming onto the panel. First and foremost, standing out to me is, of course, Apollo astronaut Edgar Mitchell. You've got former Canadian Defense Minister Paul Hellyer, Nick Pope, Richard Dolan, Stanton Friedman, on and on. You know, who else – Who are your big cards?
Well, it's not. Don't think of it as cards, and it's not a conference. This is a hearing. This is a citizen hearing. It is designed to look and feel like a congressional hearing. It is.
So talk to me about the format then.
Yeah. So here's why this project was created and why it may be powerful. I originally came up with the idea for this in late 2000, early 2001, but there was just no way we could fund it. We finally found a way to fund it, but it took 12 years. So the idea is simple. Congress hasn't held hearings on this subject since 1968, even though the evidence was big back then, and since then it's only increased manyfold. Witnesses, documents, events, sightings, you name it. Congress has remained completely silent, meaning, you know, we're just the second branch of government. Who cares what we do? We don't even care what we do. Time after time, that wasn't the case. The McCarthy hearings, Watergate hearings, some of the major events of American history in the 20th century surrounded congressional hearings. So since the Congress won't do its job, the people will. We're going to hold our hearing, citizen hearing. And the reason it's going to get attention is because it's of its size, its scope, the fact it's in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club, the fact that former members of Congress will do what they did when they were in Congress, which is sit in hearing, take testimony, ask questions, in order to bring information out that could be used by Congress to pass law. We're going to webcast it worldwide in five languages that plus English, so that we're covering about half the world's population, theoretically, right? And we're bringing in 40 witnesses to testify, just like if Congress were holding. They're going to take oaths specifically designed for the citizen hearing. And
now, what do you mean by that, specifically designed for the citizen's hearing?
Yeah, in other words, they're not legal oaths, and we will alter the wording a little bit to make it appropriate to the event, what we're doing.
Okay.
We don't want to improperly give the impression that somebody has taken a legal oath when in fact they haven't. But for the matter of a protocol and for the look and feel, we're going to do that. And in other ways, we'll make it a hearing-like. But one of the things that separates this event from many of the press conferences that have been held is that we're not just bringing in military agency political witnesses that can speak to certain things that happened, certain events, certain evidence they're privy to. We're also bringing the researchers. So about half of the 40 witnesses are some of the top researchers in the world who have spent, you know, collectively hundreds of years studying this phenomena. And the other half are military agency political witnesses that will speak to more specific stuff. So the two then complement each other. We'll build a platform for the military agency witnesses with the researchers. This is going to create a much stronger, I think, sense for the public and for the press. So that's, and then we're also filming it to be a documentary. So we're going to create a documentary around this hearing that will be hopefully going into distribution late in 2013. So, you know, the size of it, the scope of it, the cost of it, I mean, this is going to cost around $600,000. I don't know, no event ever which is engaging this issue, particularly the advocacy aspect of it, has ever been that cost that much. And the reason we're doing this is to send two key messages. One, up the street, 14 blocks to the Capitol, to the Congress of the United States, which has an approval rating now around 10-11%, which is beyond low. I mean, it's hard to even grasp that.
How did they even get elected if it's that bad?
You don't know. I don't know. But you've got, here's a chance. Get into this. Take a look at what's going on down here. Call your own hearings. There's enough witnesses out there for 10 hearings. I mean, we have a fraction of the total witnesses, 40. A fraction of the information and evidence that will be kind of alluded to here. So one message to the Congress, do your job. Start going after the truth on something of this magnitude and watch how fast your approval rating starts heading back north. The other message is to the media. The media has gone along with the truth embargo since the beginning, and that's now kind of institutionalized. They don't have to get a memo every few days from the CIA or the Department of Defense saying, don't forget, you can't ask any tough questions about this. Just cover the subject matter, write up your stories, but don't come calling to us. They don't have to do that. It's understood. Like it was understood, you didn't ask about JFK's girlfriends or who was in the White House pool. You just didn't do that, and that's the way it is. It's part of the truth embargo. It's part of the truth embargo culture. But this is the greatest news story of all time, and these organizations are in the business of breaking major news stories. And so at some point, they're going to wake up and go, my God, we actually have to get into this big. We have to start becoming investigators. We have to start asking all the hard questions of the right people. And we're hoping that this event will finally trigger that, and they'll start going after the Pulitzer Prizes, hanging, you know, loosely from trees right now, ready to be picked, ripe. Ready to fall. So these two messages are key. The most important is the media. If the media goes into serious investigation mode, not even, at a modest level of intensity relative to, say, the Lewinsky scandal or the Watergate scandal, or even the Benghazi situation, or pick 10 other scandals. If they go into just a fairly significant level of investigation on this, it's, the truth embargo is done. It won't make it through the summer. So we're trying to end that in truth embargo this year. We're not fooling around here. Now, if the media wants to continue to sit on its hands, then it may take longer. If the Congress refuses to do hearings, it may take a little longer. On the other hand, the Congress may call hearings, and the media may go into full media frenzy mode. Who knows? All of that is possible this year. There's a lot happening. We're not the only game in town. There's another movie that's about to premiere in L.A. called Sirius that has plenty of witnesses in it. It will also be probably showing in Washington the week of our event. And there are nations, other nations are continuing to release files. The latest one was Australia. Finally, after many years, they finally started releasing their files. The truth embargo is really getting hit from many sides. So it's vulnerable and ready to fall. But it's still going to require that a member or representative of the military intelligence community in the United States meet with the representative of the White House to work out the details. That's been the problem. They are both shut out of the – both sides are sort of boxed in by their own embargo. President can't act because the president can't get access to information, and the military intelligence community can't act because they work for the president, and that would be treason. And so both sides are frozen. So somebody has got to get up out of their chair, walk on down, maybe meet halfway between the White House and the Pentagon. That would put it somewhere around LaFont Plaza. Hold a couple private meetings and work out the details. What do you need? What do you want from the White House? Mr. President, what do you want from the CIA and the Department of Defense? So that this disclosure event will be conducted properly and the national security will be serviced. Cut the deal and the embargo. So that's what we're trying to make happen. And it looks as if they're not going to hold those private meetings and cut that deal until they are literally forced to by inevitable or inexorable circumstances happening around them. Fine. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. And the citizen hearing is designed to create those circumstances, to create a critical mass chain reaction within the media.
And
will end the embargo.
The timing of Sirius coming out and then exactly a week later, the citizen's hearing happens. I mean, it almost couldn't happen any better. Have Sirius come out and create a buzz, and then before that buzz can even subside, boom, we've got this other thing going on.
Primarily a coincidence. It just worked out that way.
I know it just worked out that
way. Wasn't coordinated intentionally, no.
Because I understand that Paradigm Research Group and the Disclosure Project aren't necessarily talking to each other and doing, coordinating anything.
We're on separate tracks heading in the same direction.
So this is just a super happy coincidence.
Yeah, it is a coincidence, but not surprising, because remember, this issue is being driven by a multitude of global effects and phenomena, and the public awareness is a global thing, and so all of these things are impacting the various advocacy components at the same time, and so the Disclosure Project is advancing, and PRG is advancing, and we're intersecting here. So that's not surprising, I think, but there are other things going on around the world. Those countries that are trying to contain this are sensing that they're losing their grip on it. And if they don't want to find themselves being chased down the streets of their capital by yelling, screaming press, snapping pictures and waving pens at them, if they don't want to be chased down, literally, and have to go through that, they need to quietly take the necessary measures to, in an orderly and reasonable fashion, tell the people the truth.
Is that what we need to do? Do we need to accost public officials publicly? Do we need to hound them? Not to the point of violence, obviously, but do we just need to make life uncomfortable for them?
Literally, all they need to do is ask them some simple questions. They don't even ask the question. I mean, in the citizen hearing, you're going to be learning about the Rockefeller Initiative, which went on for 3 years, that the press basically just completely ignored. Like, there's no story here, which is absurd. The people involved are major figures in American politics. They've never been asked about it. It's like, well, we just don't ask about that. Well, we've got the proof about the Rockefeller Initiative. We've got the documents. It's been put up on the web. It's been up there for years.
These are the hands pulling the strings.
Again, the truth embargo is a systemic policy of the government that's been in place a long time. It's virtually enculturized. So,
well, I mean beyond disclosure. I just mean the direction of the country, the things that have been hidden besides just this one issue. This is just being part and parcel of the whole secret culture underlying the secret government that's really running the show.
Well, again, I don't say that. I don't think there is a secret government running the show. What there is a secret empire that's kind of operating out more increasingly on its own and a non-secret government that's not very good. So,
when I say secret government, I don't mean United States. I mean planetary.
Again, I don't think that way either. I think it's a big world. There's 200 countries and 7 billion people, and way too many strings for a couple of people to just sort of play puppeteer. There are multiple power centers in the world competing for influence, money, our attention. Sometimes they're in conflict with each other, sometimes they're not. To the extent that people do not become proactive, that they don't take activist positions, that they don't stand up for themselves, these power centers will get what they want, when they want, and have a greater influence over the lives of everyone. We've seen countless examples in which citizens have brought around pretty significant change in a fairly short amount of time. We've seen the apple carts of many leaders and powerful people turned over. So it's not, I mean, I think there's plenty of room for citizen empowerment, enfranchisement, and action. This is just one area that happens to be, I think, very important. So I'm more optimistic about the potential outcomes here than some. But, you know, those power centers are not going to go away, and people of influence and money are not going to stop trying to tell us what to do.
Well, have you heard any indication from insiders or your sources that there is any sort of a fear or response inside the power structures over the citizens' hearing?
Over the hearing? Well, it's been pretty early. I mean, it was announced, you know, in a limited way back in late November. It just really didn't get going until recently. The stories are now breaking. So I don't know what the internal response is. I certainly haven't been contacted by any official entities about it. I don't expect any official entities to accept any invitations, which I have to get out, by the way. But are they interfering? No. They're not doing anything that I... My site was hacked a while back. The server was hacked, along with my tech advisor at the same time. It was clearly a deliberate hack. But it might have been just some people playing around. It may not have been government. We don't know. But it was definitely an attempt to interfere with us. But it didn't do any serious damage, and nothing since. So I don't know. I don't know what the government's feeling is about this. I may never know. It's just one more project, one more attempt to put the pressure on them. And beyond that, we can't say. And we may, you know, who knows? Maybe some people will come forward and talk about inside reactions. That would be great. If the press get active enough and ask some questions, maybe we'll get some of that info. I hope they feel like we're trying to do the good thing, that we're trying to do the right thing, and they don't feel threatened by it. But the truth will come out. And so they need to decide which side they're going to be on. Lies or truth. Truth is best.
I agree. Speaking of the press, have you gotten any reservations from major media saying, yeah, we're going to be there, we're going to cover it? What do we have in the way of media coming at this thing?
Well, we're getting calls. The story really is now breaking because of some articles in Detroit about one of the committee members. We have we have an excellent committee, much better than I thought we would have. I mean, it's not easy to get people to step out and put in a whole week on something like this, particularly if they've been former members of Congress. But we have 10-term Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, who just retired after 20 years. And we have 10-term Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey, who just left the House after 20 years.
Yeah, that's big.
We've got 2-term Senator Mike Gravel.
Which is huge.
Which is cool. A lot of people love Mike. He's a great guy. And then we've got 6-term Congresswoman from Oregon, Darlene Hooley, 5-term Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick from Detroit, and 2-term Congressman from Utah, Merrill Cook. That's 72 years of congressional service, sitting on a lot of committees, a lot of time. That's attracting attention. Now we're going to start to see more articles. Generally, mainstream media will not make decisions about what they're going to attend until 4 or 5 days ahead of time. So we won't know. Even C-SPAN tends not to make a decision until 2 days ahead. We fully expect a substantial amount of press coverage, though, and we expect a decent amount of press attention and going in for the next 20 days. I'm pretty confident of that.
Excellent. I know one of your main goals is to break disclosure open to the wider public, make more people aware of these truths. Mm-hmm. We need the media for that to happen. Because you're right, if media continues to sit on this stuff and not talk about it, then the people who are just going about their daily lives, going to work, going to school, coming home, and then, you know, the only news they get is from mainstream television news, who never broaches the subject unless it's some local report that ridicules the sighting or something. You know, nobody understands what's really going on.
Yeah, democracies absolutely have to have a good press to thrive. There is a plaque in the National Press Club in the hallway just across from where we're holding a citizen hearing. We'll be talking about that at the hearing. And it is a quote from Joseph Pulitzer, who founded the Columbia School of Journalism, and it was donated to the club on the, I think, 1962, the 50th anniversary of the Columbia School of Journalism. And the very first line of this quote is a very profound statement in just a few words. It is, "Our republic and its press will rise or fall together." And as we've seen the press stop doing its job, becoming complacent, being corporatized, we have seen the country fall. If you're going to bring a country down on an internal revolution, what's the first thing you do? You take over the television stations, the radio stations, the newspapers, the standard procedure, and then they fall. So the media has lost the fact that it's like a fourth branch of government in a sense. I mean, it's a fourth branch of the social contract. They're essential. We got 300 plus million people trying to operate in an advanced, sophisticated culture under complex government. Without the media, we can't operate. We can't make decisions. We don't know what's going on. The media is failing us. And probably the most classic example of this was the second Iraq war. The media simply laid down and started repeating.
Which they're doing again, by the way, with this North Korea business. They're just taking what they're told and reporting it as fact.
Yeah, the fact is the media has been failing us across the board, I think, in many areas, but just some areas become particularly notable because of the immediate and obvious damage. So I'm not saying that they've been doing their job elsewhere and they just blew it on Iraq. No, Iraq is an example where the cost of media failure was astronomical. Well, they've been going along with the truth embargo for 65 years. But less so each passing year. Over the last 10 years, thousands of English language articles have been written on the subject, written about the sightings and events and witnesses and all kinds of things. And I've got links to about 6,000 articles on the Paradigm Research Group website. But they're just covering it. They're not investigating it. That is where they're not going. You know, it's the difference between the Washington Post just covering what Nixon says next or what's going on, as opposed to putting the two reporters, Bernstein and Woodward, into investigative mode and saying, get to the bottom of this. The media knows it can't do that. I think they understand that if they did that, the truth embargo would end, and that's not supposed to happen. That is simply no longer a tenable solution and no longer a tenable position, and of course it's now failing the country. There are obvious questions to ask of obvious people, and if they started asking those questions, the truth embargo would be done. So, and then the Pulitzer Prizes would start being handed out. What can I say? Are they going to step up? Are they going to do their job, go with the full measure and not just sort of hang around? We shall see. They have plenty of information. We've been pounding them with information for 20 years or more, really, particularly in the last 20 years. They have access to all the same research we have, all the books, all the websites, all the videos. It's all there. They watched cable TV documentaries just like the rest of them. So I would guess that at least half of the reporters, editors, and publishers in the country know the ET presence is here. So what's going on? Do your job, for crying out loud. That's the message we're sending.
Amen. Now, have you had firsthand experience in extraterrestrial phenomena?
No.
Not one sighting?
No. Yeah, a couple of interesting moments, but nothing to write home about.
I was thinking usually, in the last couple of years, it seems like I know that I've been fortunate enough to have seen a good handful of interesting things, some completely undeniable. So, you know, I wonder that you have such drive, Steve. I was just wondering if maybe there was some sort of seminal event that kind of put you on this path.
No, and that's a good thing. That kind of thing has a tendency to burn itself out. You know, you have some connection or you have a sighting and you get all worked up and you plunge in, but it doesn't last. Or it lasts, but again, it's hard to sustain a full engagement and make the necessary sacrifices unless the motivation is, I think, a little deeper. So in my case, it's an intellectual thing. It's an activist thing. A certain amount of emotion there. But this is the most important issue in the world today. There's huge implications. There's a lot of tremendous benefits that would come from resolving it. A lot of people would be helped. Civilization might be able to take a major turn for the better. The 21st century may work out as opposed to being a catastrophe, which many, many people think it will be. So my interest is on those levels, and that tends to last. So I'm actually quite comfortable with the fact that there's no personal engagement with the issue that is driving me. Now, if I were to have something like that now, which could happen, I had a sighting like Art Bell had. Of course, that could have been a human craft. He had one of the triangles fly right over his head. He and his wife were out in Nevada. Got his attention, just like Fife Symington had one of the triangles fly over his head. But we don't know whether that was an ET triangle or a human triangle. I think the impact is about the same on the person underneath that sees this thing. But
right.
If it is human, it was built using knowledge gained from ET craft.
Which is, yeah, exactly. With, you know, it's all part and parcel. The whole, all of the secrecy, all the black projects, the technology that is being used, where it came from, you know, it can't be released because it
I say it can't be. It must be, obviously. But one of the things I think that's holding this whole thing back and has been holding it back is that there are a few very powerful corporations at the top of the capitalist heap that are making just gobs of money on old technology.
True, and, true. They're not going to raise their hand and say yes. They're not going to give you a yes vote. Are they actually blocking it? I'm not so sure about that.
Were extraterrestrial reality to be acknowledged by governments, you know, that snowballs to, yeah, these crafts are real, and we also have these crafts, and they operate on technologies that we pulled from extraterrestrial crafts, and this is how that technology works, and, you know, then the people are going to want that, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you don't need cars. You got, you know, hover vehicles don't require fuel.
We're going to need cars, but we won't need gasoline. Well, the fact is that the oil companies and the people that run them are already rich, and they'll be rich after disclosure. If the ET technology is good as we think it is, it's going to create a renaissance in economic growth, development, huge numbers of new jobs. It's going to possibly lower energy costs by a very big percentage, 80, 90, 95%, maybe more, freeing up huge sums of money to be invested in other things. The oil companies, the coal, nuclear power companies, they'll just shift their resources and buy into these new companies and these new projects that are developing, and they'll continue to be rich. There are probably a few people that are involved in these companies that are too old to change, and they just go, well, I'll just keep the status quo, and I'll get my big check every month. But it's not cut and dried. And I think there's a military intelligence community, by and large, particularly the deep national security people, could give a flying, you know, field mouse about how rich this oil executive is or not. These people are not down there working for money. I mean, money is not their driving force. They're protecting the country. And the idea that, well, some oil guy is going to call you up and say, you know, I don't know what you're thinking, but don't, you're not disclosing the ET presence because I'm not rich enough yet. I don't think so. But there's much more direct interference, though, that goes on. I mean, I think there's been a suppression of energy technology, particularly you know, amateur inventions, sequestration of patents, buying up of tech, threatening this type of thing to maintain the truth embargo. Because amateur science success in understanding how these craft operate would clearly put pressure on the truth embargo. And so I think they have moved to suppress it. It turns out that people are thinking, well, I got screwed and I could have been the king of anti-gravitics or something. Not quite likely. The government has been spending untold billions of dollars studying these crash vehicles and the technology behind them for decades. Whatever some inventor comes up in their garage, I can assure you it's 18 versions behind what the government has. And so if disclosure leads to the emergence of government-held ET-derived technology, the people that are in their garage fiddling with this stuff that maybe have had their tech eminent domained wouldn't have made much money anyway. I mean, it's still wrong, I think. It definitely. They do it in medical science, too.
But even their technology is worlds ahead of where we are presently, and humanity deserves what humanity produces.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's an irritating cliche that I frequently hear, or an irritating sort of model that turns up, and that is somebody within the national security complex will brag about how what they have in secret is 10, 20, 30, 50 years ahead of what we know about in public. And I'm going, you know, it's not like it's a picnic out here. We've got collapsing economies. We've got massive oil costs. We've got every river in the country is polluted. The oceans are turning into trash dumps. And you're 50 years ahead of technology. We could use some of that advanced technology right now. So what's your problem? So if you're not going to give it to us, then shut up. We don't want to hear about all the great technology you have. If it's not available for us to deal with our problems, we have to go away. Be quiet. So, I mean, you sort of get the dynamic there. Much too much secrecy, too much classifications, too much sequestrations, too much separation from the political oversight, regardless of what they think about the political oversight. All of this is part of the systemic breakdown in the U.S.
And so now it's time to come together to end it. At least do everything we can.
Certainly. Yeah, well, yeah, it's long past time. We hope people will spread the word about the citizen hearing on the website citizenhearing.org. We are webcasting it worldwide, the whole thing, all 30 hours, about $3.80. It's hard to get cheaper than that. We're trying to make it very accessible. Then the archive will be available for a month for $3.80. So the potential for a pretty wide audience to watch this is there. We're hoping people will use Facebook and Twitter and the other social media to kind of spread the citizenhearing.org link and let people know that in all countries, I mean around the world, they could watch this event. It may be on television. I doubt if the entire thing will be on TV. It's possible there'll be some coverage. There'll be some cameras down there from media. We'll see on that. But we're going to webcast the proceedings. And we hope a lot of people will join us on that week.
So citizens' hearings come and it goes. What's next, Steve? Ending the Truth Embargo film? Is that the next project?
Well, Truth Embargo, yeah, we'll immediately start focusing on that movie. We need to raise some more money. We're going to do some crowdsource funding, probably through WePay, in order to raise distribution money. We have the money to do the doc, but we'd like to have enough money to be able to negotiate very good distribution deals, mm-hmm. both national and international. And even if we had enough to self-distribute, which is where a lot of companies are going. There's really never been a documentary on the subject in theatrical distribution. It might have been something back in mid-1970s involving, I think, von Daniken or Velikovsky. But and I'm not sure about that. Overall, no. And this is the golden age of a documentary. So while there have been over 300 movies, fictional movies about ETs made since 1951, not a single documentary of any note and quality has made it into the theaters. We hope to be the first one. Unless Sirius beats us to it, and it might be the first one to walk around and go, "Hey, this is a serious subject." That's why it's in 2,000 theaters.
Yeah,
Inconvenient Truth was in 700 theaters, and you saw, you know, it had quite a bit of impact. And then we'll distribute it through all the other venues, pay per stream, and iTunes, and all that. We'll find other ways to get the movie out, and we will have enough footage to create a television series, maybe 5 to 10 part series. We might do that too. It depends on what the interest is. But our first goal is to create a very strong documentary and get it into theaters around the world.
And what is the scope of the documentary?
Truth Embargo. My vision of it, and I'm not the director, I'm simply a producer, but my vision of it is a movie that sort of in an emotional way, a more personal way, gets across this idea of the Truth Embargo, that for reasons, good and bad, the world's people were denied this extraordinary information for virtually one lifetime, 65 years. And approach it from that perspective. That's the idea. And that's why it's called Truth Embargo.
And any timeline on when that might be coming together?
We'll be in post-production probably by August.
Excellent.
And it's a question of how long that goes. But we want to get the film out as close to the citizen hearing as possible. Now, when it comes to movies, boy, you don't know. But we'll see. We'll see how
it's our community has learned, you know, watching Sirius come together and it's watching it. They can get kicked down the road a time or two.
Certainly. There's a lot of unknowns here, but we'll try to get a documentary. We'll get that documentary on this year for sure.
Steve, final message for listeners. What should people take away from this?
That the reality is really, in some ways, quite simple. There are extraterrestrials here, in our skies at least, if not elsewhere. The government knows about it. It's known about it going way back, into the 40s, if not sooner. Government had a policy of denying it, withholding it, containing it, for national security reasons. That policy called the Truth Embargo is no longer viable and needs to end. There is a movement to end it. It's developing steam. It's global. It's primarily in cyberspace, though on April 29 it's going to turn up at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., 2 blocks from the White House, 14 blocks from the Capitol. Help out if you can. If you can help fund some of this, we'd love to have your assistance. If you can spread the word about these projects, the links, what have you, do that. Let the media know that you want more from them on this issue. Let your politicians know you expect them to address this issue, these types of things. That's the basic thing. So it's kind of straightforward in that regard. 10,000, 50,000 books will be written about it, but in that sense, it's pretty straightforward. There's ETs here. Are we going to acknowledge it or not?
Yep.
And if we're going to, when? Then once we do that, then, of course, the interesting stuff begins. What is the government going to tell us? How quickly is it going to tell us? What are we going to do with that information? All of that will unfold in the post-disclosure world.
And that's what we're all aiming for. That's what we all have been concentrating on. That's what we all deserve. So thank you, Steve, for your work toward that end.
You're welcome, Tim.
Everybody, go check out citizenshearing.org. It's a wonderful website. It's got all sorts of information there. There are a couple of really good promos for Citizens Hearing to go check out. They will get you amped.
I guarantee it.
Thanks.
And then sign up for the live webcast while you're there if you can't be in Washington. If you can be in Washington and are lucky enough to sit on this thing, I would love to hear back. I will be watching the live webcast and be with you guys in spirit. So, Stephen, thank you.
You're welcome, Tim.
Thanks for listening to my interview with Steve Bassett. Please check out the website for the Citizen Hearings on Disclosure. Again, that's citizenshearing.org. Like I said, the two promos for the event you'll find on the website are powerful videos, and I'm officially asking you to share them with your social networks. Share them on Facebook, share them on Twitter, like them on YouTube. Between Sirius and the Citizen Hearings on Disclosure a week later, we have the best opportunity ever to move this ball down the field, the best chance ever to wake people up, to get the media to report, to not just speak truth to power, but to force truth from power. If you're listening to my voice right now, I know you're with me. I know you too believe in the future we all can have. You know as well as I do, that ain't happening till disclosure comes. Folks like Dr. Stephen Greer and Steve Bassett have been in the trenches fighting for what you and I want for decades. I think the least you can do to show your appreciation of their hard work and sacrifice is take 5 minutes to make a few clicks and send these messages out on Facebook and Twitter. Hell, maybe even share this podcast. What do you think? I love you guys. These are exciting times. Now is our chance to help determine the impact of these coming events. Till next time, keep your eyes to the sky and your ear to the ground. Namaste, y'all. Bravo out.
Tim Bravo, thank you. I rebroadcast your podcast. Bless you. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Please send me love and light on my journeys. It's a lot of hard work. And we will be reporting to you next week from the Citizen Hearing. Thank you, everybody. Namaste.